Blog Talk Radio.
Life is a song worth singing.
Life and tune.
Sing it. Life is a song worth singing.
Why don't you
sing it? You hold a key in the palm of your hand.
Use it.
Don't blame your life on a master plan. Change it. Only you generate the power to decide what to do.
Welcome, 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 ladies and gentlemen, to another exciting edition of Solar Now and the Future with its economic impact on Black America. And I'm your host, Ronald DeFay, and I have a very, very, very exciting show for you today. And you know, if you join us on a regular basis, you know that the slogan for the show, if it's power in numbers, then the positive change purchasing cooperative captures that power for your financial benefit. Today's date, ladies and gentlemen, is October the 6th in the year 2021, and it's been quite a year so far. There's been so many things going on surround the voting rights bill, the John Lewis bill. Reverend Al Sharpton, who is the head of the National Action Network, has been working diligently on these issues, trying to make our African-American community aware of the role that politics plays and impacts on our lives from day to day. You know, if you join us on a regular basis, that the Positive Change Purchasing Cooperative LLC serves as a blueprint for economic self-reliance for solar and renewable energy companies, both large and small, along with increasing market share for African-American and African owned solar installation, design, workforce development training, and EV charging and manufacturing companies to address the effects of high energy costs at our historically Black colleges and universities, also to utilize Black-owned farmlands and African-American our HBCUs campuses to develop capacity and initiatives for projects to bring down the under and unemployment of young African-American men and women locally and nationally and throughout the diaspora. Also to educate the African-American community locally and nationally about the economic impacts of climate change and the need for environmental education in the African-American community through Black Talk Radio programs such as Solar Now and the Future with its economic impact on Black America. You know, the show is also brought to you every week by the Black Sports Legends Foundation, BSLF HBCU Solar Radio Talk Show Initiative, and you can get more information on that initiative by logging on to our website at Positive Change, that's P-O-S-T-I-V-I-T-E, Positive C-H-A-N-G-E, change, P as in Paul, C as in cat, as positivechangepc.com. Now, this show is brought to you every week also by the National Association of Blacks in Solar, and I am privileged to be serving, wearing more than one hat, as I serve as the sitting president of the National Association of Blacks in Solar. We will have our new website will be up and running by hopefully the end of this week or the first of next week. So We've got things that are happening here. And as I've indicated to you, ladies and gentlemen, we have a very, very exciting show for you today. We don't have any scheduled guests, but I have taken the time to do some research. And if you follow us on a regular basis, you know that our show is leading off with Melon Solar Energy Introduction. And Melon Solar is founded by John Karenga of Kenya, Africa. And John was just on this show last week, but they have completed their trailer for their documentary. And we're going to lead our show off today by playing for your listening pleasure and our listening audience the YouTube video on Melon Solar Distributed Energy. So we're going to go right into that now as we are providing you with information that you can get by logging on to our website at www.positivechangepc.com. Click on our news and events tab, scroll down, and you'll see Melon Solar Energy Introduction. And without further ado, we're going right to that this morning.
The past decade has seen the adoption of Bitcoin increasing exponentially globally. In Africa, Nigeria has become a world leader in peer-to-peer Bitcoin transactions, moving billions of dollars on an annual basis. Over the past 5 years, BitHub Africa, a blockchain accelerator based in Nairobi, Kenya, have been driving adoption of this disruptive technology by building the largest blockchain engineering community and is now developing an innovative distributed energy storage and sharing solution called Melon Solar to solve the problem of lack of access to reliable energy across Africa.
Hi there, my name is Wanena Karanja, CEO of Melon Solar of BitHub Africa. We're building a distributed energy platform called Melon Solar SmartBox. I'm here in Kajiado County, Kenya, at Sungirene Dispensary, where we have installed some solar installation to provide solar energy to the health dispensary, a school, and a church.
Currently, solar-based solutions have a higher capital expenditure, CAPEX. As such, solar vendors are forced to sell their solutions to households, mostly farmers, using debt instruments which usually result in loan defaults and less adoption of the solar system. Melon Solar uses a tokenized energy storage model, which is similar to how Bitcoin mining allows many renewable energy providers around the world to optimize usage of the grid system at its full potential without wasting energy and achieving a specific demand target by minimizing capital expenditure needed to deploy and maintain these utilities. Storage of energy as digital tokens will help drive the adoption of sustainable renewable solar energy across Africa, which will ensure rural communities have easier and more affordable access to energy, increasing productivity by supplying energy for machine use for irrigation, better monitoring of farm conditions using sensors and agro-processing. This is because households can now become prosumers, producers, and consumers of the solar energy they harvest. A household equipped with the Melon and Solar SmartBox can digitally store energy through a proof-of-work tokenization model. The SmartBox also measures production and consumption of each of the households, eventually connecting the households into a mesh network where they're able to share energy over a peer-to-peer network called the Lightning Network.
Okay, the Melon and Solar SmartBox can be much more resistant than it because, one, initially we didn't have light for the facility, but it's lighting such that we are able to attend to patients with light. It's also security because no one can just enter and teach anything without the notice of the watchman. Because the power is enough, we are able to sterilize our equipment such that deliveries are simple and we don't have to move up and down looking for sterilizers. Because right now we have an autoclave because the power is enough. We also have a freeze where we store our vaccines. The community and the children are able to be vaccinated in the facility. So the community right now is prevented from different diseases out of vaccination. There's also another benefit in a way that we are getting airtime from the use of those dollars, and I'm able to spend my reporting time. So I'm also communicating time, so I'm grateful to Mel and my brother, and I recommend that this is the best source of power for the community.
We want to capture the abundant solar energy using PV panels and store it in the form of digital tokens, where we use the WISE protocol and blockchain, which uses a proof of work mechanism to achieve tokenization. The second point is we want to use layer 2 technology, in this case the Lightning Network, on the Bitcoin protocol, to enable peer-to-peer energy sharing between institutions such as the dispensary, the church, or school, in order to reduce the cost and capital expenditure of investing in this solar system, which are quite expensive. The third point is we want to build local capacity of engineers who are going to maintain this system here actually on the ground, instead of waiting for engineers to come all the way from Nairobi, which is Africa, and that makes sure that there is local technology transfer that makes the community more vibrant, enabling them to come up with more solutions in the future.
Ladies and gentlemen, that was the voice of John Thuringia. They put together an excellent presentation.
People ask
for
every day
solar and what they're doing with Maryland Solar is a game-changing technology and design that has come from the mind, once again, of our African brothers and sisters from the diaspora. And we know that we have the most brilliant students at our historically college, black colleges and universities, and many of the historically white colleges and universities are our African students, because when they come here for education, they're real serious about that. So if you attended an HBCU or you attended a historically white college and university and you've known some African students, you know that they're deadly serious about their education. Now, Maryland Solar has a training, they are training young people in this new mining technology, and it is free, ladies and gentlemen, but you have to go online to positivechangepc.com. You'll have to go to our news and events tab. Once you click on that, you can listen to, once again, the short documentary and scroll down, and you will get all of the information. Melanin Solar enables communities to produce their own energy for consumption and sell excess energy through a peer-to-peer model to underserved neighbors. This will enable deployment and distribution of efficient solar microgrid ecosystems across Africa. We are doing this by building an African distributed solar energy infrastructure, which includes a set of tools, protocols, and applications. At the same time, through the Academy, we intend to reduce the huge shortage of engineers who can leverage to develop, deploy, and maintain our solutions across, which has high pools of potential talent with its huge youthful population. Ladies and gentlemen, the African American community cannot afford not to pay attention to what this young brother is doing, because our young people can be trained here in the U.S. online through what they're doing at no cost. once again, at no cost. This is game changer in the renewable energy sector. Now, it's called WHIVE. WHIVE is an open source blockchain protocol which extends the Bitcoin blockchain through enabling trustless rewards to engineer sustainable solutions, building on the success of Bitcoin and the world's most secured blockchain. The WHIVE community has set out to build a geographically secured blockchain protocol and an auxiliary chain off-chain that shall allow for building applications that trustlessly reward sustainable solutions. The WHIVE protocol is built with a game theory that rewards machines operating in the region, in the world, with high solar reliability, SRIS, which is what we know in this country as energy, green energy certificates, or XRACs, which are traded on the U.S. commodities market every day, ladies and gentlemen. So it's not like this application cannot be brought to the U.S. and we cannot adopt this to help our African-American solar installation, design, EV charging, and workforce development companies in the arena of renewable energy and specifically the solar industry. So this technology and this application can be a game changer. We just have to get on board. Thus, the protocol shall incentivize engineers to the world to contribute to developing sustainable solutions to challenges facing their communities using the following engineering disciplines: network engineering, software engineering, protocol engineering. The WHIVE protocol shall be supported by a suite of software tools built to incentivize multiple third-party individuals, institutions to collaborate together to execute and achieve these visions. The WHIVE protocol is designed to unlock the potential of sustainable resources such as solar energy by enabling and distributing the economy that is interoperable with the mainstream economy. Ladies and gentlemen, this information you can find on our website at positivechangepc.com, and you will see everything. It states introduction of the WHIVE protocol, the problem, enabling cost-competitive solar, efficient ARM-focused CUP mining, 20-year POW mining schedule, Bitcoin fork, and auxiliary change rewarding solar energy adoption, transparent and accountable. It was launched on February the 2nd in 2020. Now, this information to me, to you, should be invaluable. I would like for this information to be reflected by you logging on to Positive Change and going to our GoFundMe link and providing us with support for this platform, because this information definitely needs to be disseminated. So, ladies and gentlemen, with that being said, we are getting ready to take a slight pause for the cause. And we're going to change gears as we look at Solar for All, CRESP, RFP, questions and answers. This deals with the DC sustainability they are putting out an RFP for companies that are interested in being a part and applying to be contractors through DCSEU, which gets their funding directly from the Washington, D.C.'s Department of Energy and Environment. Now, you will be able to find this information. It was published on October the 5th, 2021, was put out by DCSEU, and this Solar for All CREF RFP, the DCSEU recently released a request for proposals RFP for fiscal year 2022 Solar for All Communities Renewable Energy Facilities CREF program. The DCSEU is soliciting bids to install community renewable energy facilities, CREFs, that will enable DCSEU and the Department of Energy and Environment, DOEE, to extend the benefits of solar to income-qualified district residents, including seniors, veterans, and residents and families with limited income. Selected bidders will receive incentives to install solar, community solar, host sites with all output designated to the income-qualified residents. DCSEU has posted responses to all formal questions submitted via email, as well as questions received during Q&A of the CRE RFP information session. A link to that response is below, as well as links to recordings and presentations. The final deadline for proposal is October the 19th by 5 p.m. Get started today and submit your proposal early. Ladies and gentlemen, this information can be found where? At positivechangepc.com. Click on our news and events tab, and you'll be able to go there and apply for a great program, which I have recommended to numerous persons, friends and relatives, and some people have seized that opportunity, and they are now taking advantage of not having an electric bill of more than $40 or $50 a month. And if you can save money, that is the bottom line. So with that being said, welcome back to what we call Solar Now and the Future with its economic impact on Black America, as we are preparing to take a slight pause for the cause here on Solar Now and the Future with its economic impact on Black America. And we'll be right back to discuss Build Back Better Regional Challenge. And we will play the entire YouTube session, which is almost 60 minutes in its entirety, that you will be able to get this information, which I know will be very invaluable to our listening audience, after we take a slight pause for the...
Someone saying, "I can change, sing it." Life is a song worth singing. Why don't you sing it? You hold the key in the palm of your hand. Use it. Don't blame your life on a master plan. Change it. Only you generate the power to decide what to do with your life. You're a fool if you think you're helpless. You control what you do with your life. Life is a start singing, I got you. Singing.
Welcome, welcome, ladies and gentlemen, back to the airways of Solar Now and the Future with its economic impact on Black America. And I'm your host, Ron Bethay. And you know, if you join us on a regular basis, that call-in number is 646-668-2948. Once again, our call-in number is 646-668-2948. And please remember to press 1 on the phone pad after dialing the call-in number. Now, we at the top of the hour forgot to put out that call-in number. So once again, our call-in number, if you'd like to join us here on the platform of Solar Now and the Future with its economic impact on Black America, is 646-668-2948. Once again, that call-in number is 646-668-2948. And as I indicated right before we sort of took that pause for the calls here on Solar Now and the Future with its economic impact, that we would be playing for you in its entirety, it's 57 minutes on Build Back Better, Regional Economic Development Administration Rescue Plan, Investing in America Through Communities. Ready to submit your application for the American Rescue Build Back Better Plan. Regional Challenge and still have questions? View our Build Back Better Regional Challenge Office Hours webinar, October 1st, Build Back Better Regional Panel Discussion, and our updated frequent and asked questions, including important information about procurement, restrictions, matching funds, requirements for proposals, phase two of the project. The Build Back Better Regional Challenge is designed to assist communities nationwide in their efforts to build back better, to accelerate the economic recovery from the corona pandemic, and building local economies that will be resilient to future economic shocks. It's the $1 billion Build Back Regional Challenge will provide a transformative investment to 20 to 30 regions across the country that want to revitalize their economies. These regions will have the opportunity to grow new regional industry clusters and scale existing ones through planning, infrastructure, innovation, and entrepreneurship, workforce development, access to capital, and more. Phase one will have 50 to 60 regional coalitions of partnering entities be awarded $500,000 in technical assistance funds to develop a support 3 to 8 projects to grow regional growth clusters. Phase two, EDA will award 30 regional coalitions $25 million to $75 million and up to $100 million to implement these projects as part of the $300 million Coal Communities Commitment. EDA will allocate at least $100 million to build back regional challenges funding support for coal communities. Ladies and gentlemen, I don't have a problem with coal communities. But when we look at what's going on in the Senate, and you have West Virginia's senator, who's supposed to be a Democrat, and we all know who Manchin, we already know who I'm talking, Joe Manchin. And he's receiving $100 million from the Build Back Better Regional Challenge, but yet he doesn't want to support the human infrastructure bill. Ladies and gentlemen, that's why you need to be calling your senator, because as I viewed Renal Sharpton showed several weeks ago on a Saturday, and they had a gentleman who, white gentleman on there who was from West Virginia, and he said, Joe Manchin doesn't represent our interests. He represents the interests of Exxon and the coal company, and that doesn't speak to our needs in West Virginia. So I'm not making this up. I'm telling you where I heard it from. So with that being said, We're going to move right on into the YouTube video, and this is the information for your
This is a little bit different than EDA's normal programming, but for it builds upon the same foundations. Insofar as for many decades now, EDA has been supporting infrastructure, workforce, entrepreneurship, strategic planning, and much more to grow our regional economies. With this, we just want to do it all at once, and more aligned than we've ever been able to do it before. We believe that this will strengthen the outcomes of regional cluster-based economic development. So when I speak about regional alignment and collaboration, slide please. I'd like to one more time list out my sincere thanks to all of our customers and partners on the ground for their creative collaboration and fast action. I know this isn't easy. I know this is a lot. This is a big undertaking, and especially with the timeline that we have. But we also have a responsibility to get this economy moving again to do it in a way that reimagines how we do economic development, so that we can reimagine some of our regional economies, making them more equitable, effective cluster. So my thanks is also comes from a point of inspiration because I've seen states, municipalities, regional and statewide university systems collaborate and coordinate at the scale and speed that I don't know if we've ever seen in this industry before. I know a number of states just recently announced their preliminary selections or endorsements for the clusters that they're going to support moving forward. There's regions that are crowdsourcing partners and ideas to build stronger partnerships and support for the efforts. And I think the variety of strategies that we're seeing is really exciting, but what I think is most promising is that they're all aligned around what we're seeing right here, which is strong coordination and alignment across industry, across academia, across our entrepreneurs, our infrastructure, and much more. And I hope that when you reflect on some of the feedback and ideas shared today, that it strengthens your own strategies and hopefully prepares you and gets you ready to submit something that reflects these ideas. Next slide, please. A quick visual that might help you inventory what you're doing and some of the things or partners you might want to consider if you haven't already is this visual right here, which EDA has prepared to help you to internalize what we envision with this regional growth cluster concept and who might be leading this type of effort. And that's that lead institution right there. And it could be any member of that group. It could, that group in the circle that is, it might be a higher education organization, a nonprofit, state or local government, or a district or organization of some type. To take away from this is that that lead institution is truly a convener and an elevator of the region's work. We want to support and identify regional growth clusters where there's a true vision, alignment, and leadership on the ground across actors and partners like you see here. On the bottom of this pyramid, you see research institutions, philanthropy, labor, suppliers, industry, and more. This is an example. It is not meant to be prescriptive as much as it is an illustration of how we're thinking about building back better with regional growth clusters. So thinking about my comments before we dive into some specific technical questions, we think about the regional moonshot and what is that economic development vision for your region and the coordination across regional assets and industry leadership and these players here and building this in a way where there's an actionable vision with true leadership behind it. I hope this paints a more holistic picture, better picture for you so you can internalize what this program is all about. And once again, I know this takes a lot of work, and I know this timeline is aggressive, but so are the needs of our economy right now. And if after today's call, you think maybe we're not quite ready for this, that's okay. Because you know what? EDA has $2 billion in other American Rescue Plan programming, and that doesn't include our core annual appropriations as well. So we are continuing to support economic development, not just through the American Rescue Plan, but through all of our regular programming as well. So I hope this is a conversation starter. And if you're just learning about EDA, we're excited to partner and do business with you where your needs align with EDA's programming. So with that, I'll pop it back to Nancy and team to dive into some of the technical details of this program. Thanks, Nancy.
Thank you, Craig. If the next slide, please. We've been looking quickly in the chat here as we move along. My colleague Alana Valensky will be joining us based on technical difficulties. We'll keep going as she does that. We'll also have our chief counsel, Jeff Roberson, join us today. One of the key questions I want to highlight on this timeline slide here is, yes, this opportunity is open now. The notice of funding opportunity dropped on July 23rd. You can be preparing your applications. We hope your coalitions are forming. The concept proposal is due October 19th, and that's why we are having this webinar again now and have prepared the other resources that are available on our website. We intend to review and make awards in phase one, the concept proposals, which will be a technical assistance award in December and early December of this year. And then coalitions that are selected as finalists will move on to phase two to start preparing those component project applications. Those will be due on March 15th of next year. And we are intending to make the awards by September 2022 for this competition. And all of the projects that we fund in this competition will have a period of performance that must end no later than May 31st, 2027, so that we can have these funds expended by the dates that are provided in the legislation. So in the next slide, we are here today to answer your questions. And again, there are more resources available on our webpage. We have been fielding many questions in the Build Back Better at EDA.gov mailbox, and we'll continue to do so. And we are glad to tackle more of these here today. So let's get started. Next slide, please. A fundamental first question here in response to some of the questions that you have had and what we presented before, who is eligible to receive grants under this competition? So these entities that are available under this competition are EDA-designated economic development districts, Indian tribes, state and local government entities, institutions of higher education, public and private nonprofit organizations that are acting in cooperation with officials of a state or political subdivision of a state. So regarding the last category, some of you have asked how a nonprofit can demonstrate that they're acting in cooperation with state or local governments. The support of appropriate government units can help to show that the project meets regional needs and may help avoid the risk that the project will not meet EDA's eligibility criteria. For applications covering large geographic areas, EDA recommends that applicants provide support letters that cover the majority of the region or to get support letters from the appropriate state. Grant recipients in this competition must meet the eligibility criteria that is set forth here in the legislation for these eligible entities. And this means all members of the applicant coalition that Craig mentioned before. This is the lead institution and the coalition members who will implement the projects with EDA funding in this competition. So they must all fall into one of these categories. And as a reminder, EDA is not authorized to make grants to individual small businesses or other for-profit entities under this program. Those entities certainly participate in the cluster, but they will not be participating as applicants for EDA funding. These would be the other cluster partners that are so important to the success of the program. Next slide, please. Here's another question that we have received. Applications from the same industry or region. We have received many questions like, will EDA accept multiple applications from the same state or region? Will EDA accept multiple applications from the same industry cluster? We did not restrict applications from the same area or industry coming in. However, given the small number of awards that will be made in this competition ultimately, it's unlikely that we'll be able to fund applications for similar clusters in the same region. Applicants whose regional growth clusters target the same region and related industries should consider opportunities to consolidate projects and align partnerships on related strategies for regional growth and competitiveness. You know, as a reminder, this national competition through which EDA is providing these transformational investments of $25, $75 million, and even up to $100 million in grant funding is ultimately to 20 to 30 regions that will be selected across the country to grow these regional industry clusters or scale their existing ones. So we really do anticipate strong competition for these funds. In addition, it makes sense for us to highlight here the EDA Selection Review Committee will consider funding recommendations that are based on our selection factors, which do include geographic and regional balance, as well as the project and industry types supported. So you can read more about this in the Notice of Funding Opportunity, or the NOFO as we'll refer to it here, in Section E.2 or page 35 for more details on these criteria. Next slide, please. So here's another set of questions we've received about what do we mean by region and what geographic footprint can our project cover? And these questions have ranged from, you know, is there a minimum or maximum size we should consider when determining the geographic footprint for our cluster? Can we locate all of our group of 3 to 8 projects in one town or city in a single jurisdiction? And can our project, to the other extreme, have a national scope or footprint? So we'd like to answer those in the following way here. This challenge certainly allows applicants to plan and build within a footprint that makes sense for the applicant's strategy and industry cluster. So our program design funds several projects that will proceed together to advance a common vision. This is really a rare opportunity for applicants to align efforts, leverage resources, and strengthen the foundation for regional cooperation and future investment. So it makes sense to consider a group of projects that reach beyond traditional boundaries, such as a single jurisdiction or a statistical area. It also suggests that a proposal without a strong regional identity and a committed place-based set of relationships may not be a good fit for this opportunity. So the program intent and the evaluation criteria really emphasize the connections, the coalition building, and the impact of the proposed investments and that these will have on a regional economy. This diagram, which you've seen before in our presentation, illustrates some of the ways in which a regional cluster might form to be able to do this. For example, to encompass projects that link rural and urban areas together, that connect universities and capital cities with manufacturing centers, or that form corridors linking labor markets, supply chains, and other factors that create the potential for a strong regional cluster. There are some further examples. We really urge you to take a look at Section A of the NOFO that identify a lot of different approaches that can be part of what you consider. The bottom line here, though, is that EDA's approach is just not prescriptive. The applicants can define the region and the geographic footprint that works best to build connections, exchange knowledge, share resources, increase innovation, and provide those other advantages that will accelerate the growth of their selected cluster and the region. So now we'll turn to the next slide. Okay, so here is another set of questions that we received turning to the distress criteria. So in our core programs, and many of those of you who are listening today are familiar with these, EDA funds projects that meet distress criteria based on relative unemployment and low per capita income of the project area. But as noted in our frequently asked questions and certainly just in the notice of funding opportunity, projects proposed under this challenge are not required to be located in areas that meet those distress criteria. But applicants should indicate how their projects, if funded, will address economic distress in the targeted region, both long-standing and as caused by the pandemic. They should also indicate how the benefits of the cluster will be shared equitably across all affected communities within the project area. You know, a distress criteria is also one of the evaluation criteria in phase one. And in the NOFO, it discusses how we will be assessing this criteria. It goes to the assessment of need for the potential impact of the proposed project. It is consistent with the program outline that's the program intent is outlined in the NOFO. So this is also a good place to mention our $100 million coal commitment that EDA has made through this challenge. This will help address negative impacts from the closure of coal mines, coal-fired power plants, and disruption to related supply chain businesses, and the related economic conditions that are facing those communities. So conditions contributing to economic distress in your area really can vary, and on the next slide are some tools that you might find useful in your analysis. Here are two of the tools. We highlighted a number of these in our technical webinar that's posted on our webpage at the Build Back Better Regional Challenge Program webpage on EDA.gov. Two tools here, though, that we wanted to highlight for you that will be helpful in describing conditions and opportunities that will be addressed by your projects. We are encouraging applicants to use quantitative measures where available. So here, these might be especially helpful in documenting conditions and planned outcomes and impact measures for your project. The second one on the slide here is our measuring distress tool that is available at statsamerica.org, which is one of EDA's partners. It provides practitioners with a fast and simple way to calculate whether your project area may meet EDA eligibility thresholds for unemployment and per capita income. That can also be valuable here. We also want to highlight on the top here a new tool from the Argonne National Labs with EDA's support, which includes a variety of useful data dashboards for exploring similar unemployment and per capita income indicators, as well as a host of other economic risk factors, including impacts from the COVID-19 pandemic and other conditions that may be facing your region. This tool is called the National Economic Resilience Data Explorer, and it has some easy-to-download reports and links to key underlying data sources, so we really encourage you to check it out. There's a link on the slide here, and these slides will be available for you where you can go straight to those tools. Next slide, please. Okay, so another group of questions that we received have centered on the Comprehensive Economic Development Strategy, or SED. And this includes, you know, how do we ensure that our proposed projects are consistent with a regional SEDS or an equivalent economic development plan? What if our projects for this Build Back Better Regional Challenge growth cluster are not included in a SEDS, or there's no EDD for our service area? Or what if the SEDS haven't been updated recently to reflect current conditions? You know, can we still apply? So we answer this in the sense that, you know, your coalition's vision and the group of projects for the cluster should certainly be consistent with your region's comprehensive economic development strategy or an equivalent EDA-accepted regional economic development plan. So that's the said. EDA-designated economic development districts are required to update and replace those SEDs at least every 5 years with action plans that address near-term activities and implementation goals, as well as medium and longer-term goals, strategies, and objectives that are developed through an ongoing and collaborative process. The proposed regional growth cluster and the component projects in your application need not be specifically identified in a SEDs or an equivalent regional plan, but they should be in tune with the economic development needs, opportunities, and outcomes that regional stakeholders have collectively agreed to pursue and advance the comprehensive vision for regional economic prosperity and resilience that are expressed in those plans that cover the proposed project area. So if your region is selected to move into phase two, the lead institution should discuss in their overarching narrative for that phase how the collection of proposed component projects will more specifically support the economic development needs and objectives outlined in the applicable SEDs or equivalent plans for the region covered. And applicants can also include letters of support from organizations that prepare SEDs or equivalent plans for those areas served. Applicants from geographies that are not covered by an economic development district are encouraged to reach out to EDA, our regional office that serves that state in which the proposed regional cluster is based. Our EDA regional points of contact or economic development representatives are listed in Section G of the NOFO, and they can help the applicant identify if there's an equivalent EDA-accepted regional economic development strategy and organization that they can connect with. Next slide, please. Okay, so importantly, as Craig pointed out in the beginning, there is a structure to this initiative that has a lead institution serving as that point of contact for the regional coalition of applicants who have component projects and are putting together this vision for your regional growth cluster. So we have received questions about the lead institution, such as, can a lead institution participate in more than one Build Back Better regional challenge application? What is the lead institution's role in both phases of the competition, so both this first phase and in phase two when projects are funded and implemented? Will the lead institution be responsible to EDA for the component projects that support the cluster? So an entity that submits an application as the lead institution for one regional growth cluster may participate as a cluster partner or even a coalition member, an applicant for distinct component projects in another Build Back Better regional challenge application. But it's less likely that the same entity could successfully serve as lead institution simultaneously in multiple clusters. The feasibility and capacity of any entity to undertake multiple projects to support different regional growth clusters and to complete all projects on time and within budget should be carefully considered. This is especially relevant to the lead institution since their role to continue across both phases of the competition. They submit the concept proposal for their regional coalition and will implement the Phase 1 Technical Assistance Grant if selected as a finalist. With that grant, the lead institution will help the coalition further develop the region's strategies and projects for a competitive Phase 2 submission. The lead institution can also serve as lead applicant for one or more of the component project applications in the cluster. So we do want to clarify, though, on that last point that with respect to the component projects in the selected regions, each coalition member that's funded with a Phase 2 component project will carry the responsibility for that project, and that includes meeting the administrative and program requirements described in Section F of the NOFO for their grant. So the coalition's lead institution will still have a role in continuing to foster communication and coordination among all the component projects and the other cluster partners, as well as with EDA during implementation, and each individual coalition member's project with a component project will be responsible for its own phase two performance relative to grant management. So this is a good transition to our next topic, which is the component project. And the next slide, there you go. All right, thank you. So here are some of the most frequently asked questions, I guess, that we have received in the mailbox for sure on component projects. One of them is, to what extent can those component projects include several related subcomponents? And then, you know, if selected for phase two, can we include a project, a component project in the phase two full application that wasn't listed in my phase one concept proposal? And then must region's entire group of component projects begin at the same time or have the same period of performance? So firstly, you know, projects can include related subcomponents that fit together under a coherent scope of work to support the cluster, and this is similar to how EDA approaches our projects traditionally. EDA does expect that regional coalitions may identify new or modified implementation projects in the course of preparing their phase two application. So that's the period between when they submit the concept proposal, which is due October 19th, and then finalists, they'll have those couple of months after that, so March 15th, to really refine those. So we expect that when it's the case that a new component project or partner coalition member joins, then that coalitions that want to include those projects in their phase two applications, they will explain how that newly identified project will support the regional growth cluster and what occurred in that interim period to add that project or modify that project. And these projects can have varying periods of performance. This competition allows for construction and non-construction projects. Those can have quite different periods of performance. So that's based on the nature of the project and the scope of work. The projects should nonetheless be well coordinated and all aligned to support the overall vision of the regional growth cluster, including both through their near-term actions and their long-term impacts. So, and just remember that all projects that are funded through this competition in phase two must be completed by May 2027. Okay, so now we will turn to another presenter so I can get a rest of my voice. If you can turn to the next slide, we'll introduce Jeff Roberson. Jeff?
Hey, this is Jeff Roberson. I'm the chief counsel at ADA. Happy to give Nancy a drink since she's doing most of the heavy lifting. I'll do the next couple slides. This one relates to match requirements, and a lot of these are already addressed in our FAQs and on the website, but it's worth going into them specifically because they come up quite frequently. The first question is, can entities other than the lead institution and members of the applicant coalition contribute to the required match for component projects? The answer is, matching funds for component projects can come from a variety of sources, including state or local governments, philanthropy, industry partners, or other non-federal entities. You should be advised, however, that many types of federal funds can be used in these EDA match requirements. There are some that are available, such as like HUD CDBG funds, but there are some that are not. And it's useful to talk to your local representative at EDA to make sure that your sources of funding are legitimate, highly used for match. And one that currently is not available is the Department of Treasury's Coronavirus State and Local Fiscal Recovery Funds. They have not decided that those funds are eligible for match. They might change that opinion at some point, and we'll make that abundantly clear on our website if they do that, but currently those treasury funds are not available to use as match. The second question that we get quite frequently is, what documentation must I provide with the concept proposal, that's phase one, with respect to the accessibility of matching funds or other complementary investments? In terms of concept proposal, the lead institution can address how coalition members plan to access matching funds for the component projects in the concept proposal narrative, in the key element dependencies, or even through documentation included as part of the phase one submission, such as letters of support from cluster partners. Their additional documentation of committed match will be required by the finalists when they submit their full phase two applications, and those submissions are going to be due on March 15th, 2022. So at the phase one phase, you just sort of have to have a general idea that it's going to be available. In phase two, it's going to have to be much more firm. And that gets to question three. Will EDA require each component project to meet the match requirements separately, or can the non-federal cost share be met in aggregate by the entire group of projects? So at that stage, phase two, applicants should indicate match committed for each individual component project. EDA will evaluate each finalist portfolio of projects holistically and will review the component project application specifically to address that project and the applicant's eligibility as well as viability and feasibility as part of the regional growth cluster. It's worth noting that individual projects, just because they were proposed as part of a cluster, may not get funded. So we may fund, if you submit eight projects, we may have to choose to fund only seven. In match or other, you know, feasibility issues might be the reason why we might cut something out. The phase two overarching narrative and each component application should therefore specifically address the match commitments for each of the proposed projects. For more information on the cost sharing and match requirements program, you should look at section C3 of the NOFO. Next slide. Now we've had a lot of questions about how states can support regional coalitions. And those questions are, you know, how can a governor's office support a regional coalition in this competition? Can states provide a letter of support to more than one Build Back Better Regional Challenge applicant? And can states use federal recovery funds to meet the match requirements of the competition? So EDA encourages regional applicants to demonstrate strong collaboration with state government partners, as well as with local government, private sector, labor, and community-based organizations. Those activities that are coordinated and strategically aligned with state economic development priorities and resources are well positioned to foster long-term growth and sustainability. Where there may be multiple coalitions forming to submit applications on the Build Back Better Regional Challenge, EDA encourages governors and state agencies to consider applicants' projects in the context of their statewide plans for regional recovery and to facilitate partnerships to combine efforts where feasible. Remember, as Nancy said earlier, we have limited funds and limited awards that we're going to make. So anything you can do to combine efforts to make yourself stronger would be advisable. States may also participate as members of an applicant's coalition to implement component projects or can work with lead institutions for each coalition to provide letters of support, access to eligible matching funds, or other available resources as part of the competitive application for assistance during phase one concept proposal and subsequent phase two full application. That means the states, if they want to, they can choose to support more than one cluster. Again, given our geographic limitations and the amount of money that we're looking for, we're not sure how many we'll be able to give any particular area, so that's a strategic decision. And as the last question, I've already sort of addressed it on the previous slide, but it's worth reminding you that at the current moment, Department of Treasury's coronavirus state and local fiscal recovery funds are not available to be used as match. And there's additional guidance on the use of other federal recovery funds, including HUD, CDBG funding, in question 44 of the frequently asked questions on our Build Back Better Regional Challenge webpage. Applicants can also, again, talk to their economic development representative, or EDR, for more guidance. And as Nancy already mentioned, the EDR is in Section G of the NOFO, but also available on our website if you go to eda.gov/contact. Next slide. A couple of questions came in about private sector and community support, and they're related to, you know, who can be eligible entities. The first question is, can an industry representative be a lead institution for a regional growth cluster, and can industry be a coalition member? The answer is a for-profit entity cannot be a lead institution, and it cannot be a coalition member, since only entities that are eligible for EDA funding can serve as either of those two roles. That said, they still can be part of the group. They can still, the other two questions, how can the private sector support a regional growth cluster if they can't be the lead or coalition member? And how can the community and civic institutions that are not applicant organizations support these projects? The answer for both of those is basically the same. So while they can't be a lead or a coalition member, industry and other private sector partners, as well as philanthropy and community leaders, can demonstrate their support in many ways, including through commitments of financial or in-kind assistance, hiring commitments, or other strategies to support high-quality jobs, private sector and community-led coalition building, to strengthen the connections and expand their cluster partners. You can engage communities to increase participation and engage in the historically underrepresented groups in the project plan area. You can also any other activity or means that advance regional vision for growth and sustainability of the cluster. They just can't be the individual recipients of an EDA award, but they can be part of the whole package. You want to describe these contributions and the roles of these industry partners or philanthropy or other private sector partners that may not be eligible to be a recipient. You still want to describe what roles and contributions you're making in your phase one concept proposal and supporting documentation. Next slide.
You're listening to Solar Now and the Future with its economic impact on Black America. You are listening to Build Back Better Regional Challenge through the Economic Development Administration. It is known as EDA, the Opportunities for Long Range Economic Development Plans for Regions across the U.S. The question that comes to play, well, what does this have to do with solar energy? Well, when we began to look at the opportunities for African Americans in the solar industry, it is very, very clear that the information put out by the Solar Foundation, the Solar Industry Trade Association, SEIA, through the Department of Energy, there's numerous reports that talks about the disparities for the African American population in terms of employment, in terms of looking at the business sector. Out of 9,000 solar installation and design firms, we have less than 30 African American firms doing business in the United States of America. So we're talking about the fastest growing industry in the U.S. for the last 11 years, going back to President Obama, it would for the last 13 years, going back to President Obama's election in 2008 to 2021, and we look at the growth and advancement of the African American community in terms of businesses and institutions. When we begin to look at our historically Black colleges and universities, we have less than 5 solar farms built on African American BCUs of our historically Black colleges and universities. The largest of these projects may be the University of Maryland Eastern Shore, which has a 17-acre farm, but it sits on 800 acres of land. If we're talking about truly looking at something that would change the game, the HBCU Collaboration Group, which was founded by Mr. Ron Butler out of Miami, Florida, and their organization of Community Development Corporation, CDCs, which are located on our HBCUs with our small business development centers, should be looking at manufacturing opportunities through these forms of grants, building large-scale solar and wind farms offset their energy costs, as well as selling that energy through community solar projects in their market demographics. This is why I am playing this extended YouTube webinar to let people know that these institutions should be going after this money in public-private partnerships with our African-American solar installation firms. That's not happening, ladies and gentlemen. So if you wanted to know the relationship between solar energy and this opportunity through EDA, I'm trying to connect the dots. My name is Ronald Bethay. I am president of the National Association of Blacks in Solar, and I also serve as the founder and CEO of the Positive Change Purchasing Cooperative, which you are listening to, Solar Now and the Future, with its economic impact over the World Wide Web through Blog Talk Radio. We are streaming via Twitter, Link, and Instagram and Facebook to bring this information out to our listening audience, which is the African-American communities, to raise a discussion of why these partnerships don't exist. It's very clear to me that many of our African-American solar installation and design firms and our developers have reached out to our HBCUs, and we have struggled with getting support from the presidents of these universities. We can't color code that. We can't, but the question becomes, why? It goes back to the politics of who's paying and who's doing business with these universities and looking at the old game. It's called payola. So who gets benefits from one company getting a contract opportunity with a historically black college or university, whether it be state or private? Is it the board of directors? Is the board of regents on the state level? I can't answer that question, but we know these things exist and they happen every day. So, with that being said, the number two fixed cost at any college and university in America, whether it be historically white universities or at our historically black colleges and universities, their number two fixed cost after salaries is energy. This makes no sense to me that we have beat the drum about the five-year HBCU sustainability plan that Dr. Lillian Abrams, who is one of our truly unique souls in the African-American community, who is head of Peer Consultants, who started her firm in Washington, D.C. in 1978. It's the largest African-American environmental engineering firm in the United States and the world. She started in 78 with three employees. She now has the post, I call it, plandemic, which is known as the pandemic. She had 200 employees, engineers, and most of those engineers and accountants, these people were graduated from our historically black colleges and universities. She needs large-scale solar and wind environmental projects that we need to be partnering with our HBCUs with it. We have the plan. It has fell on deaf ears, ladies and gentlemen, because if it's not the idea of one of our historically black colleges or presidents or HBCUs, which we have to sell it to one and let him take it to the rest, because they don't listen to nobody but each other. I'm not telling you what I think. I'm telling you what I've experienced. We know that ego is always at the door, and it always gets involved, and it's a problem with us as African people. We might as well push it on out there. So with that being said, we're going to get back to the webinar. But before then, I have to let people know that this is being brought to you by who? The Positive Change Purchasing Cooperative, which serves as self-reliance for solar and renewable energy companies, both large and small, along with increasing market share for African and African-American-owned solar installation, design, workforce development, EV charging, and EV manufacturing companies to address the effects of high energy costs at our historically black colleges and universities, to utilize African-American-owned farmlands and HBCU campuses to develop capacity and initiatives for solar installation projects to bring down the unemployment number of our young African American men and women, to educate the African American community locally and nationally about the economic impacts of climate change and the need for environmental education in the African American community through Black Talk radio programs such as Solar Now and the Future with its economic impact on Black America. This show is also brought to you every week by the Black Sports Legends Foundation, BSLF, HBCU Solar Radio Talk Show Initiative, and you can get more information on that initiative by logging on to our website at positivechangepc.com. That's positivechangepc.com. Also is brought to you by the National Association of Blacks in Solar. And with that being said, ladies and gentlemen, we're going to get right back to listening to this valuable information about the Build Back Better Regional Challenge, which the RFP is out now from the Department of Economic Development Administration. EDA.
I think that's back to me, Jeff. So thank you for going over that important information. This will be recorded, so you can listen to it again. We know it's a lot of information, so we might be rushing you through these, but we don't expect that you might get everything on the first time around. So we hope that by having these recorded, you can review this information again and again. Most of this information that we're going over here is certainly information that's in the Notice of Funding Opportunity. It's information that we have addressed in frequently asked questions that are written out for you on the webpage. We know folks absorb information in different ways, so we're trying everything that we can to really clarify the information that's out there and make sure that you all have the resources you need. So through these webinars, through our written materials, and through the highly technical Notice of Funding Opportunity. So now moving on to the Technical Assistance Award and questions that we have received there. So there's really almost two parts to the phase one application, which is the materials, which is the concept proposal and all of those important support documents, letters of support, the appendices that allow you to describe your regional growth cluster and the partners and projects therein. There's also a pretty substantial technical assistance award that is part of this application project that goes to the lead institution. And, you know, this is designed to provide the finalists, those 50 to 60 finalists who we select on the basis of these concept proposals, with both an immediate and an ongoing resource to support their cluster strategy and projects. So the anticipated project period, you know, we've had these questions, what project costs are eligible for funding under phase one of this competition, and can my coalition use the phase one technical assistance funds past the phase two deadline, that deadline of March 15th? Even if my coalition's projects are not selected for a phase two award, and are there any restrictions? This is another one that's really a technical question. Are there any restrictions on using contractors procured under the phase one EA grant in the implementation projects that EDA may fund in phase two? So if the technical assistance award is used for those pre-development assistance for those phase two implementation projects, you know, what should we think of there in terms of procurement? So as mentioned, you know, the substantial technical assistance award that goes to the lead institution, the anticipated project period for that can range from 12 to 24 months or even longer depending on regional needs. So it's not spend all this money before March 15th. In getting ready for that application, that phase two application. This really is a technical assistance award that should stretch across those other phases. So, and that's because there's a variety of uses for the technical assistance award. For example, the award really can cover that component project application readiness role, such as developing architectural, environmental engineering plans, for those implementation component projects. It's also for helping coalition members mature their plans and strategies to reach historically excluded populations, you know, racial minorities, women, areas where are harder to reach or that we haven't reached with resources in the past. It also goes to the creation of the Regional Economic Competitiveness Officer to serve as the coalition leader, the liaison to EDA and other federal agencies. And it really should be creating a long-term infrastructure. So technical assistance efforts to benefit the regional growth cluster long after the phase two application submission. So I don't think we can emphasize that enough. And in the next slide, which some of you are going to recall from our past webinars, the applicant webinar, this might help you visualize these activities across the period of performance for the TA award. And I'll also address that question about procurement. So here we've tried to kind of really help you visualize with a lot of material on one slide. And again, we presented this and spoke to it a little bit more in the technical webinar that's recorded on our website. The initial activities, you know, will start promptly with the award in December of these technical assistance awards to the finalists. And we anticipate those grant periods will then start then and stretch out for 12 to 24 months, maybe more if relevant. So we're looking to see what your milestones are, what your timeline for that technical assistance award is when the lead institution submits this concept proposal and the application for the TA award. So at its heart, the technical assistance should help 50 to 60 finalist regions to refine their plans and strategies, to ensure community engagement, to accelerate collaboration and support for project implementation for the cluster. The Regional Economic Competitiveness Officer, some folks are saying, calling this a RECO, can work with the selected regions to support project implementation and help the non-selected regions, right? So 50 to 60, let's say we'll get finalists, we'll get the Technical Assistance Award, these lead institutions. Some of those may not succeed in the 20 to 30 that we ultimately can select for implementation funding. This technical assistance award can help in both cases. So it can help those non-selected regions to mature the projects for future funding opportunities at EDA or other agencies. If you are selected for phase two, then the phase one technical assistance grants can go towards additional planning and coalition building that support the cluster implementation of those activities. So since these technical assistance grants can be used for certain preliminary costs of the projects that may receive subsequent EDA assistance, applicants are strongly encouraged to review those procurement restrictions in Section H of the NOFO. And we have reiterated and explained those procurement requirements also in some important frequently asked questions responses that are now available on our webpage. Those give you more information and some options to ensure that all the competing contractors equal footing from the beginning. So I want to point out FAQs right now are numbered 22, 23, and 24, but there's a helpful heading if you look at those on our webpage. And again, they're all found towards the bottom of the Build Back Better Regional Challenge webpage under Program Resources. So next slide, please. All right, this is related, you know, what is required for this Regional Economic Competitiveness Officer? Is this Regional Economic Competitiveness Officer expected to work full-time on this project during phase one? Or is the position flexible based on the needs and scope of each project? Does the Regional Economic Competitiveness Officer position have to be funded out of those phase one technical assistance awards? Or can this position be included and funded on an ongoing basis out of the phase two awards? So these are good questions, and certainly we've had a lot of them. This position, first of all, is required to be based in the lead institution, and it has an important role both during phase one application sprint and afterwards. So this can be a new position or an existing one. Some roles and responsibilities are certainly outlined in the Notice of Funding Opportunity, and more were discussed in our overview webinar. That was the very first webinar we did way back in August 2nd, and that's recorded and on our webpage. We really are looking to this position as a valuable point of contact for coordination within your region and the cluster with EDA and among the peer regions really that will be selected in this competition, so cluster to cluster even. So generally though, EDA has provided applicants with the flexibility to structure this position in ways that fit the industry, the region, the coalition, and the model for your cluster. So this position can be supported by the Technical Assistance Award, and lead institutions can continue the role as part of a phase two component project as may be relevant, you know, to accomplish the cluster activities, so long as the applicant doesn't duplicate costs for this position that may be covered on another federal award, including another EDA award. The lead institution for the coalition should provide a description and a timeline for staffing this position in the project and budget narrative in the phase one technical assistance award. So that's very important. So you can talk about it in your concept proposal materials. Definitely include this in the narrative that goes with the technical assistance award application materials. And I'll mention that again in a moment. Next slide, please. Okay, coming in towards the end now of this presentation, evaluation and selection processes, very important. How will EDA recognize equity considerations in proposals submitted under this competition? This was noted again in a sort of related set of questions we got about, you know, regional assets, industry leadership, sustainability, and equity. These are named specifically as key elements of a strong regional growth cluster success. And they're in the NOFO, their evaluation criteria, but are they really weighted equally with other review criteria, or are these more important than others? In this program, like EDA's other American Rescue Plan programs, we really aim to advance EDA's investment priorities, including the extent to which the projects will provide equitable and shared benefits across all affected communities. And we encourage applicants to review our investment priority on equity for further insight on how EDA will consider projects and investments in ways that ensure these equitable outcomes for historically underserved populations and places. Equity is one of our of the four key elements in a strong regional cluster mentioned earlier, and it's one of the nine review criteria for the concept proposal submitted in phase one. These four elements are features of a strong cluster. And there's other criteria there, you know, they'll help to evaluate the cluster and the project, certainly, but the other criteria are also equally important, and they help us to assess demonstrated need for the project and to help ensure success in actual implementation, so that's the feasibility and capacity.
Ladies and gentlemen, that concludes our coverage of the Build Back Better Regional Challenge YouTube online webinar, the evaluation and selection process for this is online at the Positive Change Purchasing Cooperative. And you can get more information by logging on to our website at positivechangepc.com. That's positivechangepc.com. Now, as you know, ladies and gentlemen, we bring you this show every week, and you know that call-in number is 646-668-2948. We have a couple of minutes, and if you have a question, you're welcome to join us. But in our closing weekly, people know that once again, that this show is brought to you every week by the Positive Change Purchasing Cooperative, LLC. And the slogan for this show, if there's power in numbers, then the Positive Change Purchasing Cooperative, LLC, captures that power for your
It serves, the Positive Change Purchasing Cooperative, LLC, serves as a blueprint for economic self-reliance for solar and renewable energy companies, both large and small, along with increasing market share for African-American and African-owned solar installation design, workforce development, and EV manufacturing companies to address the effects of high energy costs at our historically black colleges and universities, to utilize African-American-owned farmlands and HBCU campuses to develop capacity and initiatives for solar installation projects to bring down the under- and unemployment numbers of young African-American men and women locally and nationally, also to educate the African-American community locally and nationally about the economic impacts of climate change and the need for environmental education in the African-American community through Black Talk radio programs such as Solar Now and The Future with its economic impact on Black America. It's also brought to you every week by the Black Sports Legends Foundation, BSLF HBCU Solar Radio Talk Show Initiative. You get more information on that initiative by logging on to our website at positivechangepc.com. Go over to our GoFundMe link. Also, it's brought to you by the National Association of Blacks in Solar. And our website is blacksinsolar.org. And we have a template up right now, but we have a much more what we would call a developed website that will be, we will be bringing to you for your educational purposes for through the Black Sports Legends, through the National Association of Blacks in Solar. With that being said, ladies and gentlemen, that concludes today's show. And as we say, we want to go in peace. So until next week, we don't want you to meet us here, but you want us to beat us here as we conclude another exciting edition of Solar Now and the Future with its economic impact on Black America.
I hear someone singing, I can just sing it. Might be the song we're singing, why don't you sing it? You hold the key in the palm of your hand, use it. Don't blame your life on a master plan, change it.